Hi, I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And I'm June Diane Raphael.
And this is
The Deep Dive.
We're about to do what women have done for centuries. We're crowding around the fire with our generous haunches. We got babies hanging off our tits, and we're going to share with you our fears.
That's right. Our joys.
Our tips on how to stay alive.
Now, Jess, we are heeding a call that no one has made.
Not a soul, but you're invited to listen.
Absolutely, because we make one promise and one promise only. We will not Google a thing.
Because frankly, we're too damn tired.
Please get ready to go on
The Deep Dive.
Hi, Jessica.
June, that spray tan is still hanging on.
Do you think so?
Yeah, it looks great.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, this is when a spray tan moves into its, they have nine lives, you know, so this is sort of,
this is its molting phase.
Exactly. It's like it was a spray tan. Then there was some actual color on top of it.
Got it. That's what,
you know what I mean?
That's it. That might be it.
Yeah. So you're looking at a few different things over here.
And listen, let's move past the shallow, but because we're going to get so deep today with Jesse Klein.
I can't wait.
Who just wrote a book called I'll Show Myself Out. Oh my God, June, this book, it destroyed me and I have to talk about it later. Okay,
we're going to talk about it later. I did want to talk to you because I was actually listening to How This Get Made did a live show last night, and I was driving home. I'm like, God, I haven't listened to Bish Session so long. And I know that they were talking about our trip to Miami, so I put it on. And Casey and Danielle were telling a hilarious story about Casey's travels and her being in first class and getting a special airport service in which she doesn't need to go to actually LAX.
She's so out of her mind
and an inspiration. But she was saying, Danielle said something. And by the way, as I was listening to essentially the same recounting.
Sure, of your own life.
Of my own life that I had already shared with you and shared with this podcast. I was like, wow, is this, what kind of like Marvel universe are we creating?
And are we only ones interested?
That's probably. But, you know, then I was like, I was so enjoying it. Again, stories.
Your own life.
Jess.
Is this the height of narcissism?
Yes, I know.
Is this the height?
But also from a slightly different perspective and hearing Danielle's take on Casey, like I was fucking laughing my ass off. And I was like, you know, so funny. And then I was like, couldn't be stranger. And yet it reminded me, and I've talked about it before, of sitting in my bedroom and looking outside and seeing my mom being dropped off by her girlfriends from like probably either Overeaters Anonymous or Al-Anon or some sort of 12-step program or prayer group, and seeing them sit outside for hours in that car and talk.
Oh, God, thank God we're
That's what we're sharing. You know, what a lovely way to get inside the car, which is what I've always where I've always wanted to be, you know, peeking in and hearing like, what could they possibly be talking about?
And, you know, it's fascinating because we've had a lot of DMs recently. You're CC'd, whatever. And everyone says at the top, like, disclaimer, I know June will never see this, but like, if you feel like sharing, but so many women are writing in and saying, you guys remind us so much of our group, and we listen every week and laugh together. So it's such a weird thing. It's like we're talking about our own group, then this other group is laughing about their group because of something we said.
It's really quite special.
It's like a gigantic clown car.
Yeah.
Full of not just us, but all these other groups, of which, by the way, we would feel welcome.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, they're throwing divorce parties, they're throwing bachelor parties, they're throwing baby showers, they're throwing just like who cares parties and just laughing and I just fucking love it. And Jessie actually brings this up in her book about how, you know, in the early stages of motherhood, her only bright lights were her boozy lunches with her dear girlfriend.
Yeah, of course. Well, I wanted to talk. So as I bring this up, because I was listening to the opening of Bitch Sesh, I only heard a little bit of it, but Danielle was describing how her and Kulop and Matt were just regular civilian passengers.
Yeah.
She said that you had a term, Jess, for they were calling themselves like
steerage?
Basically no it sort of okay it's basically like the front line, like the people you know they put in first, but there's a term for like the maniacs, but the
what is it
not ramblers but
ramshackle ragtag bag of dreamers ragtag bunch of dreamers
oh fuck
anyway
I can't remember okay I gotta come back
to it.
It's basically like I don't know if it was a military term about putting in people who are so fucking crazy. That just so like chaos and like who are like half maniacs ahead first.
Yeah, that is
front of the line.
That's you know, wild.
To see. Oh, God, I wish because she references you. I wish you could remember what that word was. Anyway, I laughed so hard. And I was so inspired by so many of the DMs. And again, yes, it's going to sound like this is a recap podcast of our last episode, but so many of the DMs from ladies, a lot of people ready to get back on their vodka Red Bulls.
Oh, and interesting. I didn't get any of that feedback.
I got a few of those, like ready to
take it to the
talked to Jason Mantzoukas last night. He's like, I've never had one. And I was like,
oh, I'd like to see that.
I don't know if I want to see that. Maybe I do.
Maybe. But well, our one dear friend has, and she hasn't had it in a long time, one party a year that I go and stay till the bitter end, and it shocks everyone because people don't usually see me out and about. And I've been wanting her to have a party that her theme was Havana Nights.
Ooh.
And it was going to be poolside and very much Dirty Dancing, bring a watermelon, don't. And that would be the night that I would have to
take out the vodka Red Bulls.
Yeah, let's do it. I'll do it too.
Oh gosh. Well, I really want to turn everybody on to that.
Yeah,
really
what a public service.
It is.
Service.
It is. But then I got, you know, one deep diver made me laugh so hard. She wrote him when I posted about last week's episode. She was like, I love it. She goes, I love you ladies, but Houston has one of the best cancer hospitals, like basically in the world. And I was like, I wrote it back.
That's true.
Like,
Andy Anderson and my dear friend Molly.
I believe every word. Yeah, I believe every word of what you're saying. You know,
that's true. Actually, people do fly from everywhere in the world. Just,
you know, and she said it with such grace and
a children's hospital too.
Thank you for the learning. You know, I believe you. There's not one inch of me that's debating that.
Okay, so you can go for both. Great. That's
honestly even better.
Houston lives their best life. I know that for a fact.
Better.
I've been to the rodeo. I've been there. I mean, I'm a snowbird. I go there every year.
God,
I mean, sometimes twice.
I do think, I don't know if Houston can sponsor us, but I do feel like we're doing quite a bit of legwork over here. You know, like for a beat like Austin, I think Austin's kind of getting
everybody knows about
but
Austin.
Like,
it's time for
a new city to pop up and off. And I feel like maybe it's Houston.
It's definitely Houston.
I love the cowboy hats. I mean, I feel like if we're going to do a live show and we're going to talk about that pretty soon, don't worry,
Houston.
Deep divers. Like it does.
Houston, Miami.
Feel like Houston's maybe our first stop.
Oh my God. Yes. And Miami. Miami is our retreat. I mean, I've really been going back and forth between Napa and Miami. And I am having lunch next week with Jenny, who is going to be our retreat organizer. And I want to see what her thoughts are. Miami versus
I mean, they're
Napa.
Both unlikely spots. I was going to say Houston. You know, I'm so curious.
Maybe Houston. It's a wild place.
I'm just so curious about it all and what's
available there.
You can
go to the rodeo and eat meat on a stick. I've done that.
I'll never forget.
Leg.
We've talked about it before, deep divers, but your best look ever.
My rodeo queen look.
Was when you were a rodeo queen on Bless This Mess. Lake Bell show on ABC.
I look great in like a low slung bell bottom jean, like a, just with a boot. And yes, but you can't really wear that around here. There is a cowboy culture in Los Angeles that BB is getting up to be a part of because of the horses.
Horse riding. Oh, that's cool.
There's a whole neighborhood where people ride horses around in Burbank. They can keep a horse in their backyard. It's wild.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I'm considered it. You look out your front door and people are clip-clopping down.
Wow.
Yeah. There is, but it's not on. Yeah, it's not where I'm living. Again, should I be moving? Everybody wants to know, to the east side.
I'm not even going to get started with that because I don't want to get my hopes up. I had to like kind of let you go. I'm just like, yeah, you know, I'm here. You know, I'm here when you need me, when you're ready, but I can no longer, you know, I got to protect myself.
I know. Oh, by the way, I know that you had, so everyone wanted to know Easter, what's the update? And I know that you had a brunch already scheduled at the Four Seasons. So we couldn't do it at your house. I invited myself to my other surrogate mom who is living Pam's backyard.
Oh, great.
She is not going to be there. Her husband is, Alan. And I said, Alan, can I invite over a couple ragtag, kids? I said, I'll bring, which kind of sandwich would you like? And he said, I'd love that. Now, that's a crazy, Dan was like, I can't believe you're inviting yourself to the backyard of somebody who won't be there. That seems wild, doesn't it?
I don't mind it.
And yet, there I am. I'm not going to go inside their house. I don't have to.
No,
I'm
bringing the whole activity is outside.
I want the kids in their finest.
Well, I kind of,
and the adults.
Absolutely. It's the one day, you know, I don't have the bag nearby, but I just got the boys' Easter outfits.
Oh, you get a new outfit for them.
I do. So they don't have dress clothes, really. I mean, they wear dress clothes on Christmas. They wore it when we went to the premiere in New York, but like they don't have them. So I always end up I have to buy them because they're not available.
Is it a mat? Is it a short? Is it a long short with a blazer? What is it?
It is a long, it's khaki pants, but they're kind of like skinny pants on them.
That's cute.
And then they're both wearing blue and white gingham long sleeve button downs.
Yeah. Now, this was my grandmother's favorite holiday. And
this used to be mine. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
She would come in a pastel colored, she's from South Philly, pastel colored polyester suit. She was always in a matching suit, jacket and pants, and a little blouse and all of her gold that my dad would buy her because my grandmother had nothing. I mean, nothing. When she used to tell me that when they were little, when my dad was little, they would be $5 short every week. Mm. And they would go to Aunt Ella, who didn't have kids, and borrow $5. She was their credit card. Anyway, she used to come sit next to me. She was the funniest, but very shy. And we both hated fruit. So we would bond over how we hated the fruit salad. I would always start the meal, a little fruit salad in a crystal little goblet. Because my mother was always the tablescapes. Come on.
Well, now, Jess, so what are you going to wear this Easter?
God, I don't know.
Now, because I think, you know, obviously I don't have a girl unless one of these boys tells me otherwise. And I'm always curious about the, like, mother-daughter dressing the same look.
I want
it cute.
Okay, BB and I went to try to buy matching bathing suits the other day.
It's cute. I saw you in Miami. Yeah.
Okay, we really want it. And if anybody, the deep divers have links, because the one store we went into, unfortunately, BB was rocking every one of those suits, but I looked insane in what they had to offer. And BB was looking at me like, do I just say it looks good so we could have the matching suit? Or like, but then eventually we were like, we got to get out of here. But I love matching. I wish I had done it earlier. Now, my nanny used to match.
That's cute.
With BB, which was really cute when they would come to set. And then, you know, one person said, you got to be careful. My nanny did that. And then they ended up having an affair with my husband. And I said, again, not possible.
Not really worried about that.
Not really worried about that. He's here making a coffee, so I don't want to speak out of turn.
Let's
but I'm
be
not
careful.
Really worried about that.
So, you know, I wanted to talk to you because we didn't really get to
hold on one second.
Please,
he's
please.
Grinding beans.
Oh my God.
When
leave us alone.
You're finished. You hear that?
I don't.
He
but
thought
I believe
that was appropriate to do in the middle of a goddamn podcast. Because
they want to get in and they want to be a part of it. They want to get into those cars. Like, let us have our space. They occupy all spaces.
Really? Here he goes. He's going to now do his drip. We're waiting.
Yeah, we are holding.
We're on your time.
Yep.
Friend. All right. June, you were saying.
I was just saying, speaking of matching things, you know, I was just at Disney, and which is like the land of matching.
That was a wild culture to me. I never knew about.
So I've known about it from going to Disney out here. And, you know, I think it's fun. I like it. And I know people have different feelings about it. But I'm like,
why would you
enjoy
have any negative feeling? Don't go to Disney if you have a feeling about it.
Exactly. And it's like, if not here, then where? If not now, when? So, but one of the things I found very troubling was there's a whole thing at Disney where if you have a girl, first of all, I find the Disney like princess culture to be quite upsetting. But if you have a girl, I saw lots of families where the girl was dressed as a princess.
Yes.
And then the dad was wearing these shirts that said Princess Security. Oh. And the little boys, like her brothers and stuff, even babies, were wearing shirts that said Princess Security. Oh. And it was really unsettling. Now, when I tell you, they were everywhere.
That's right.
Everywhere.
That's wild.
It was so fucked up.
But why isn't the boys wearing their favorite character?
Because
the outfits are not as good and there's probably not as many.
No, because their parents have decided that it's best that they protect their sister, even if they are 6 months old. It was just
very
bizarre, Jess, and really unsettling. And then a lot of gendered stuff, like Princess Security, and then lots of mom wearing a t-shirt that said like, I'm here for the ears. And then dad wearing a t-shirt that's like, I'm here for the beers.
Oh.
Or mom wearing a t-shirt that said like, happiest place on earth. And then dad wearing a t-shirt that says like, most expensive place on earth.
Like,
or like,
he's playing
bibbity bobbity broke.
Not untrue. Not untrue.
But it was like,
that's really weird.
It was a real look into just
the subtle ways that we're all put into
not
our
so
boxes.
Subtle. Not you know, so it was subtle. Like Disney yeah. is a place. And then in a very cool way, and that's why it was amazing to be at Miami Beach Pride that week.
They're very embracing of the
in terms of the don't say gay.
Right.
Bill and all of that. I mean, I think Disney has had I think they also share a really fair critique on not pushing hard on some of the stuff that's going on in Florida. Yet they do have a history of being like very inclusive.
Right.
And creating a workspace that's really welcoming. And they have recently, I don't think as a cast member, you were able to show tattoos.
Oh,
or like have tattoos.
Yeah.
So like lots of things are changing there. But anyway, so that's true too. And yet it is a place where men and women are able to like reinforce their gendered roles in such a way. It's like, and they're equally enjoying it. And it was very strange. Boy, was it strange.
Yeah, that
and then a lot of COVID deniers as well.
Oh, really?
Who were proudly wearing those t-shirts. Yeah.
Wait, those t-shirts that said
t-shirts.
Fuck COVID?
There are t-shirts. I'm trying to remember some of the phrases, but it was like freedom to not wear a mask, shit like that.
Whoa. Well, it's Florida.
It's Florida, yeah. A bunch of like crazy Trump t-shirts where he's
that's really tough.
Looks like Jesus Christ. You know, it's just
well,
it's a cross section. It's a cross section.
That's what I was gonna say. And one of the uncles works for Disney, and so BB has grown up in that culture. But of course, for us, I mean, we go to Disneyland, and the princesses come to us.
Oh,
I don't know what to say except for that the princesses come to us. They find us. They are the friends of Uncle Ryan, and they find us. So it's a different scenario.
You
I've never gone as a lay person. Okay, he's Olaf in the show. He's Disney royalty. I can't really talk about I could talk about, you know, not even if is there another level of that where you're a cast member even though you're not? So I can't say anything negative.
No, you can't. I will tell you, I did try to get special Disney access, and those were tough emails to write.
Yeah,
several different people. Some at ABC.
Sure. They're like through my publicity channels. And I was like,
to have to write an email to basically say like, I don't know if I'll be comfortable there. You know, I don't know.
Right. You've been there like every Saturday for like the last like 8 years of your children's lives. And before that, that's the other thing is you were an adult Disney goer before
I was trying to get free. I was trying to get access. I was trying to get what you have at Disney.
I want free stuff. If I can have it, I want it.
I want one of those plaid jacket people to lead me around, take me.
Well, it's the lines I can't handle.
No, can't do the lines. So I put out several feelers, you know, and those are uncomfortable emails to write, you know, to have to say like, these are my credits and what is that
translate to? And to find out it's nothing, it's really.
Zero.
Hey, do they have that restaurant? This is such a boring intro. I'm sorry, people, but I'm enjoying it. Do they have that restaurant where the whole thing is an aquarium? Still,
we were not there. We were at the space restaurant where you go up at Epcot.
That's awesome. I'm sorry.
It was so cool. And then sitting there in the way it's sort of this immersive experience. And then there's no windows. So they have this incredible like audio visual experience where you look out and it looks like you're in space.
That's awesome.
And there's astronauts like floating around.
It
was really cool.
That's worth it. That's fun.
It was fun, you know, it was fun. And I, you know, of course, I yelled at my children a lot, into a screaming match with Paul one night. Yeah, you know, all of the other Disney things that you'd expect happened, for
that's
sure.
That's vacation. Have to build in a day where you and your spouse won't be speaking. Yes. And you're going to have to try and like... stand online for 4 hours and not speak to your spouse.
Yes. So all of those things were right on schedule and right on time.
Yeah.
You know, that's okay.
Yeah.
But it was really fun. And I think I've told you this before, but once you're there, because we were there for a solid 6 days.
Jesus, by the time I was at day three,
that's a long time. Okay.
By the time I was
at day three, I was looking at those gift shops and like some of the fashions. And I was like, ooh.
That's
and everything's
cute.
Got Disney on those ears all over
like,
them.
But I was cute. I need that jean jacket. I need that millennial.
I was like, ooh, I like this bag. I like this little tiny backpack. It was scary, Jess. Like, I went fully in. I was like, these are some nice fashions.
Yeah, because that's your
really
new
beautiful
world.
Items.
You live there.
I had no choice.
You live there. And I will never go. You understand
why?
We went once.
Because it sounds like you have access.
I do. I have access to Disneyland. I will always go to Disneyland. But again, I won't go to Disney World because we went once. We had had a, oh, God bless. We'd had a death in the family. And my dad decided it would be best if we dragged my mom there. And and then also it was a cold snap. It was like, you know, once every 10 years, a frost hits and kills all the oranges and we just don't have oranges for the rest of the year. Well, that's happened that weekend. So we were freezing and just like, I remember just like dragging my mom around. It's just so Irish of us to just keep going, you know,
to take it there.
Going. The happiest place on earth. So that was the only time I went, and we won't be back. And I also think it's really important as a kid to have a completely failed vacation from start to finish. Like, I also remember the day we got there, the hotel We had like multiple problems getting there from New Jersey, I think probably because the frost. And then we got there and the hotel had no water. And so I just remember my brother, we're all in a room, my brother, and the heat was terrible. Like no air conditioning, no power, I don't think. And he just, I'm dying of thirst. Can somebody get me something to wet my whistle? Yeah, and I think he got bronchitis. I don't know if it was the same trip, but I just think it's really important to have a very failed trip.
I think that's a family. Yes.
Failed.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about as somebody who, you know, had many failed vacations, I know my mom, oh, God bless her, craved a hotel. And it was so rare that she was able to get one.
Yeah.
We were campers. And that was like vacation. And, you know, it kills me now because I'm like, what I would give to put my mother up. Oh, you
would treat her.
Oh. And that's hard, you know, because I'm like, ugh, I would be so excited to share my points with her.
I know. God, you got to have them on as a sponsor.
I know. But I wonder if any deep divers relate to that. Like when you lose someone, especially a parent, and then, you know, you realize you're in a different position, either financially, you have more stability, more resources, and what a goddamn gift it would be to give that back to your parents.
Well, two things. Susie Nakamura premiered on Broadway last night. She was in her first Broadway play. I can't remember the name, of course, because my brain doesn't work. But you know I'm a medium to other people's parents.
Yeah.
I had a psychic hit last night. I was like, I got to get to Susie. And I said, your mother is beyond right now. She's beyond that you're on Broadway right now. Beyond. And she wrote back like, you know, I burst into tears when I got off stage. Like I knew she would just have lost it. So like, I know we want to treat them. I know somehow they're enjoying it. I don't know how.
I do think so. It's just one of those things that's a small thing that I'm like, oh, I know my mom spent so many fucking quote unquote vacations, like spending 2 hours creating our shelter with my dad and being so angry about it.
But you don't go camping, right?
No, and I won't. And I won't.
Because you would think that tradition would. No. I wouldn't even know what my dad was from South Philly. How is he going to put together a tent? Mm. That was not going to. We wouldn't survive even a night.
Yeah. No, my dad would take. And I look back, I'm like, he took us to some pretty cool places. Like we went to Bish Bash Falls in upstate New York.
Sure.
Like we camped. That was our vacation. And sometimes we were in a cabin, it's not a hotel, and mostly we were in tents. And I have no desire to do that. And there were fun times, of course, for us kids, but I remember I was so tapped into my mother's emotional state, you know?
Of course.
I was like, it's like people pick up the grass and watch, throw it up and watch which way the wind will blow that day. Like I was looking at her always to figure out.
Always.
Where we were, where we all were. And yeah. I just know she wanted a hotel so badly and deserved one.
I'd argue though, wherever she is, she wouldn't have had it any other way. Like I bet you anything if you asked her. Right.
I don't know, Jess. I don't know.
I think wherever the thing is where, and I, again, I am an expert because I am a medium only to your parents and apparently Susie's mom and Lila, but where they are,
I know.
They don't have the same, regrets.
Believe
they just
that.
Don't. They don't. But yes, like my grandmother who had never been out of, she'd been out of Philadelphia once to go to Atlantic City for her wedding, for her anniversary, you know, for her honeymoon. My dad brought her after my grandfather died to Hawaii. I mean, everywhere. And she'd never been in Las Vegas. And she would steal the little salt and pepper shakers.
Wow.
And she would make the bed. The thing that made us laugh is she would make the whole bed just to, you know, because she didn't want anyone to see it being messy. She didn't understand. And it was a real, it was such a treat to treat her like a queen. It really was. Because she'd had a hard, it was a hard existence. So that was really, and to, you know, and keep her outfitted in all of those pastel pantsuits. She must be around today and during Easter, she's around.
Well, I love that, Jess. And I do think, you know, I do have that opportunity. I definitely had that opportunity with my dad to, you know, but it's beautiful. To me, that's one of the, if you have good and healthy relationships with your parents or grandparents or elders, it is one of the great gifts of this life, which is to, you know, when your generation comes of age and hopefully is in a better position than them financially, resource-wise, that you can give back, even if it's just with your time and energy.
That's right.
It's
treat
so
them
beautiful.
Like queens. They should be the honored guests at your holiday celebrations. They should be the honored guest.
Yes.
They're and not hosting anymore. They are the guest.
Yes. And I am able to do that with my in-laws, and it is a great pleasure. It really, really is a great pleasure. God bless the elders. Jess, we have someone very special who's about to join us. I know you really wanted to talk about the book and get into it before she was on, which is really strange. Like, did we almost already had this interview without her there?
I can't stop thinking about it because I literally can't stop thinking about it.
So Jess is like fresh off a read of the book. So she's really chomping at the bit. And, you know, I had to stop her and say, let's wait for our actual guest to get here to chime in on some of this stuff. But that's how excited we are to welcome Miss Jessie Klein. She is the New York Times bestselling author. We've had three New York Times bestselling authors on this podcast. This is our third.
Sorry.
Her book, You'll Grow Out of It, is one of my favorites. And we're going to talk about that in a second, too. She's an Emmy and Peabody Award-winning television writer, producer, creator. She's currently the showrunner of I Love That For You on Showtime, starring Vanessa Bayer and Molly Shannon, who also has an incredible book out right now. She's an actor, consulting producer on the hit Netflix show Big Mouth. One of my co-stars, I'm also on that show. Not to derail this bio, but we are co-workers there. And she's also written for Netflix's Dead to Me, Amazon's Transparent, and Saturday Night Live. Please welcome Jessie Klein to the deep dive.
Oh my God.
Hi, Jessie.
Hi. I'm so excited to be in this dive. I truly worship you both. I am so honored, hashtag flattered, thrilled to be here.
Jessie, you know, I had such a thank you for joining us. And we're going to talk about the book, and it's already creating quite a stir.
I'm like, I want to be really honest. I have felt a little like crying from the moment we started our podcast, like 30 minutes ago. Then we talked about Disneyland and it dried up. But that's how that's how much this the reading of your book affected me.
Wow. To tears, Jessica.
Yeah. 24 hours later. This book is, I want you to tell us about the book because you'll do it better than we will.
Okay. So the book is called I'll Show Myself Out, Essays on Midlife and Motherhood. And I'll Show Myself Out as something I feel like I've just found myself saying basically at the end of every interaction
I've had
with kind of anyone in the last 6 years or so, which happens to be around when my son was born. It's the book is kind of came out of, I had my son in 2015, he's almost seven, and a couple of years into it, you know, I'm not what one would call a natural mother. And
I feel that.
Just was having a bit of a hard time with it and was trying to find like a book that kind of went into what I was feeling and, you know, not to ping off deep dive, but like there just wasn't anything or the, not to say wasn't anything, but I found very little written recently that felt like it was as both funny and kind of relieving and comforting as I wanted it to be, but also as dark, dark, dark as I was feeling.
Yeah.
And so I was like, maybe it's me. Maybe this is what I don't know. And there were just specific moments I was having with my son, where it just felt so intense and surreal. And I was like, this feels worthy of writing about, even though I know that sort of motherhood as a topic in this culture is just seen as kind of like, who cares? Like,
or banal. Like, what's the word? Banal. Like, it's just too, it's the day to day things.
How is that possible when this feels like the most intense thing I've ever experienced?
Oh my God. I do think that there's something so infantilizing about how we treat mothers, and from the marketing of mommy this, mommy that, mama this, mama that, to the color landscape, to
the
just
color
like, the colors. It's
we're
very
all in peach. We're in peach, which by the way, for all of us, is not a good look.
Not great. Blends right
just
in for me.
Earlier, please know, Jesse, because I can't not have you know this. I did ask Jessica if she was going to dress the same as her daughter for Easter, and I encourage her to do that. So,
and I will try. If
I'm
I have
both
time.
Participating, please. Upholding, and trying to dismantle at the same time. So it's fraught.
Look,
okay?
It's fraught.
So
we wear a lot of hats.
Yes,
competing hats quite often.
Little hats, big hats, sun hats, baseball caps. I write. There's a chapter in the book where I write about my experience with Halloween with Asher, my son, and talk about upholding, not dismantling at all.
Oh,
and just the pressure I felt. And I will say, I think I'm someone, this, I don't mean this as a horn toot in any way. So I don't want to sound like one of those, but it's more just like a giving up that has occurred from a very young age. But there are certain sort of like societal pressures and demands that, I mean, I feel all of them, but some of them I'm able to just cast off pretty early on because I just know like I can't do that. And I think the desire to be like a perfect mom or like the mothers you see in diaper ads who are just like when like that angel light is just coming off the baby and they're just so, I was like, I'm not that mom. I'm not the diaper ad mom. I'm not the like laundry detergent mom who's just like, how will I make these whites whiter?
But you do feel the pressure to, because it's weird, even though, and I feel like all three of us are, you know, there's something Island of Lost Toys about us. We don't fit in the model. That's when you talk about going to the park for the first time.
Oh yeah.
And thinking you're wearing your strange, you wore the same splendid skirt.
Splendid.
I was
splendid in some time.
Navy and a gray.
Oh my God, Jessica. Splendid, I think, is still in action.
Okay.
Have they passed? For the first year at least that I was a mom, I was just not doing well physically in the body department. How could anyone?
I
mean, some outliers, but anyway, I had two skirts from Splendid that were both ankle length and elastic waisted, and it was real rabbinical.
I was thinking it was rabbinical.
It was rabbinical in nature. It was rabbinical in nature, and I was just like, well, of course, this is what all the other moms are going to be wearing. And then I had like a button down. Truly, like,
that's a tough look with that kind of stretch material, and then you throw on
I just was lost. I had this
shoe. I'm picturing like a Tevas or something.
Oh, a Toms. Yeah, they were dirty Toms.
Well, I can't bend down to buckle or tie, June.
Of course.
I'm so sorry. I can't bend down over my own stomach at that point, hon.
Of course.
Anyway, okay. And I remember showing up to the park and they're just, you know, we're in LA, we're in specific neighborhoods and just these little Gwyneth adjacent beauties. And God bless
how
anyone.
They do it. Nobody knows.
How they do it.
We're
all born
knows.
With different bodies, and I'm not judging. I'm just saying that was a shock. Yeah. What I was saying before was that Halloween for me was one where I couldn't give up. I just I wanted to like get that kid in a cute costume.
Yeah.
Starting real early.
Yeah, put him in a lobster costume.
Put him in a lobster in a pot. Yes. You know, a matching family, hot dog, mustard, ketchup.
Adorable. Love Stop. It.
But my child, again, hashtag God bless, was just he just hated Halloween. He had like a lot of sort of sensitivities around like having costumes on. Like he's just
yeah, he didn't like it.
He just shortcut.
Fair enough.
Long story short, hated it.
Well, it's so
and funny. We had some real humiliations around it. Some real humiliations. And I had to really that was a moment that was for me a trigger thing where I was let like, go I wanna have Halloween.
God. You know what? It's so interesting to God, motherhood brings up so fucking much. And so it is it truly is like I don't know. I think it is it's primal work. It's ancestral work. It is
ancestral
a return to self. It's a reparenting. It is what it's not is like an Instagram ad. It's just not. And so it is so hard like culturally to place it, right? When you are, I think like so many of us are, you know, older and not older. Of course, we're also young and supple, but we are
smooth, awake for little the dolphins.
Awake for the experience in a different way.
That was one specific moment when I started really thinking like, this was so painful and intense. I think I need to write about this, but it also feels inherently again in this culture, like no one gives a hot fuck, but how is that possible? When I was potty training him.
Oh, this is exactly what I was just thinking about.
I mean, that journey was, it's like the thing of like, as soon as you start, you would never. And of course, like, I didn't think about that process before I became a mom. Like, I was like, what?
Should be natural. And I don't know why we have that and putting them to sleep that when you have the newborn and you're like, I'll never forget that night. I was like, I have to teach this thing how to go to sleep.
All of the things that you're taught are told or are taught, like that's a natural thing. And none of them are like breastfeeding. Where like the idea that, you're just going to like hold, boo, pass.
Tomatoes.
No thanks. Pass. There are just so many things that you're just sort of thrown into and are supposed to come easily and don't. But there was a moment. Yeah, the potty training thing was so, again, a little cliche here, but like deeply Freudian, deep, crazy stuff around control.
You were trapped in a Starbucks bathroom.
We were trapped. Stall. Basically, we had taught Asher. He was like, he would pee at home in this little plastic potty that we'd been told to use, which apparently is a huge mistake because then they have to be taught to use the real toilet. It's a whole,
Okay, then why do they sell them?
He would pee. Why? Because we're fucked. Yeah. Because we're fucked in a K-hole. But we couldn't get him to pee out of the house. And we were in a situation where we just, anytime we were out of the house, like we could be out of the house until he had to pee. And then he would sort of just be like randomly, like, I want to go home. And we'd be like, do you have to pee? And he's like, no. Oh, but it was like, insane. It was a crazy making. So one day we're like, well, and this may or may not have lightly been child abuse, but we were like, what we're going to do is we're going to take him to Starbucks and we're going to like load him up with like a hot chocolate or something. And like, he's going to have to pee there. We're going to like force him to do it there.
Yeah.
And then Mike was like, well, I think this is a moment between a mother and her child. So you're going to do it.
Why?
This is a whole other
book. It's not like, the mother-son dance at the wedding, the
boutonniere.
It's like, I don't count this as one of the...
No, it's not one of those
special ones. Markers.
Yeah. There's no Hallmark card around this moment. Forcing your child to pee at a Starbucks. But anyway, it became like a little, like a terrible one-act play where he like lost his mind, was clawing at the walls.
I think he's written something like this.
Sitting on the floor, like at some point I just was like, I give up. I'm sitting on the floor of this bathroom. Like women are coming in and out, like hearing screams.
Screams. Oh, it's so public.
And
it's
like
public,
you see.
But once you've
committed.
You've put the line in the sand. And what are you, and they tell
We're
you
not
if
leaving.
You go back on it, then
Then it's all, then it's anarchy. Now we're in anarchy. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I just was like, that moment, it was so humiliating, sure. infuriating, truly horrifying, because my son was like screaming that scream kids have where he's like, "Mama, no!" Like to like, oh, a God, performance, God. Like, "Mama, no!" And just, and I'm, I don't know what to do. And then I'm just thinking of like my younger self. And I'm like, I used to fuck guys.
I know. Like,
I used to like, God.
I know. People wanted to fuck me at one point.
Yeah. Like, you know? I was on stage.
Yeah.
I was doing stuff. I was out late. I would be out till 10:30.
Yeah, you would.
10, 11.
11, 11,
and just 30. That moment of like, what have I become? Yeah. Like that feeling of what I'm on the floor.
Yeah, by the dispenser, like
by
yeah.
the dispenser. Well, and so just, I was like, I just want to know that other people have been here and felt as truly dark as this
yes,
feels.
We have, of course. And I think what's so refreshing, I mean, I've got a lot of feelings about this sort of commodification of motherhood and how we, you know, our culture says we care so much about mothers and we hold them in this, like, like in some ways we saint them and treat them.
Oh, sure. Well, you know,
and then
whore.
Yet in other ways, completely devalue
abandon
the experience,
them.
Abandon them and
totally
don't recognize
them.
Any of the labor
abandon.
They do. So it's so, there's so many mixed messages around it, but I am like really, what I find so refreshing about this story, and why I'm so excited to read your book, Jesse, is there isn't a ton of space for the conversation around like just the mess of it. And I don't mean to say, because I know Jess and I have talked about this before. It's not, and I struggle about this with myself sometimes. Like I'm also not a Kathy cartoon who's like, mommy needs a drink, you know. I actually am a very confident mother. And yet what I resist though is this idea that I have to kind of like optimize my motherhood or optimize the experience or make it, or that every moment, like when a child's screaming in a stall, that's actually quite normal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that is, that's actually the expectation.
Yeah.
Is that these little people with their big emotions that they have, that they can teach us about, like that is, our job is not to change the way that looks really for anyone, but it's so hard. And I think a part of the reason it's so hard is because we don't have enough storytelling around just the depth of it, the pain of it, the grief around it, the joy, like all of it is so rich. And we view it through like a very small lens.
Yeah. It feels like what you're permitted to talk about and feel about it is about the circumference of a penny. And yeah. And it seems like you're saying, it's like the wine mom of it all. Like, it's like one thing I've always felt is like the sort of, again, not to be putting down anything else, but like just the even like what is considered like things that are made for moms to laugh at. Again, it's like, oh, it's like you got poop on your face, like your baby peed on you, like you know, like that kind of stuff. Where wine mom, and you're like, sure, yes,
yeah,
but also like in a world where for me, like, I don't know, you know, the funniest stuff is the darkest stuff, and that's stuff that you have to laugh at to survive. It's like the darkness of it feels very much off limits, and it leaves the comedy that's like mainstream around it to be very like
CBS.
It's very CBS. And it
I
just
am available
can,
as an actor for
no, absolutely.
I need a job,
hope so just, that any execs are listening.
Please
read for any.
We'll produce that. We'll produce that, and we'll write the other books. That's fine. We'll, if you give us some time.
Yeah,
we'll
gotta get off the pod. Hollywood's calling.
Yeah. But Jesse, tell the thing that really got me was the chapter about when you went on a solo work trip. And you realized you started the whole trip, really, you were grieving your younger self.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the loss of self, because you were saying return to self, June. And I was thinking, God, I remember, and I know you've also talked about this, June, is like that you lose your younger self. And I also lost my younger self when I went through cancer. But there is that grief that is so overwhelming.
Profound.
Yeah. Yeah. Will you talk about that experience?
Yeah. I wrote this chapter called The Butterfly that was about, we did that thing where, you know, like, we have a membership to like the Kids Museum, Kids Space. And it was
we all have that membership.
No big deal. Go anytime we want, off hours, whatever.
All right, we have a different tier of it, but okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, it's not for an entire, you know, it's not for friends and family, just family. But no, I was that thing where they said, it's like, come get like a, you know, the little caterpillar and a butterfly thing. And I was like, oh, this will be, we'll hatch a butterfly and it will be this like beautiful lesson for my child. and then I'm like, I'm going to go with him to get the butterfly. And then I'm a piece of shit. So I didn't go, and I sent our nanny with him to go get it.
Sure.
And then like from the get go, it was like, oh, cause I had just never done that little exercise with the caterpillar before. It's like,
it's gross.
This looks gross. Yeah. I was like, this is
not
really unpleasant. And yeah. I don't know what I was thinking it would look like. And then, but I got very obsessed with it. And I was like, I'm keeping this butterfly alive. Like this caterpillar is going to become a butterfly. If I have anything to say about it. And right around the same time, I was doing a trip to New York, I think actually to try and sell this book. Wow. And I was the only one really taking care of the butterfly. I was constantly checking on it. And of course it's like this idea of metamorphosis and like, oh, it's supposed to be this beautiful process that leads to this beautiful thing being born. And then like, I was looking at this insect and it kind of, you realize like, oh yeah, it has to liquefy. It's like a fucking bug on a stick. And then I went to New York and had this like amazing week and just was like checking in on the butterfly the whole time. And it was just, and like, I kind of, yeah, it was, I had this afternoon at the Museum of Modern Art, which is a place I grew up in New York City, and I used to go there all the time. I was like an art kid, and I remember just like looking at people. Like it was my last day in New York. It was a beautiful day, and I remember just looking at people, like just like walking around, like just having a leisurely day. And I was like, oh, I have like one more hour of this, and then I have to get back on a plane and go. And Asher was like around 3 at the time, which is
It's tough.
And I was like, this is over. Like, I can't just like, this is this part of my life. Like, I just remembering being young and like being in high school and college and just like a day where you're like, I'm going to go look at art. I'm going to drink booze. I'm going to hang out with my friends. And it just was all, I felt like really, like I felt it deep in my guts.
Sadness. Agreed.
Sadness. Yeah. And I was like, and it really made me think like I have become this new thing and I don't know what it is yet. Like I'm not what I used to be. I don't exactly know how to be a mother.
The butterfly yet.
I don't know how to be in the pupa stage.
I'm in the pupa stage.
And I still feel like I'm in the pupa stage.
Yeah, you do too.
I'm just like, what does this look like? I don't know. I truly to this day still don't totally feel like I understand how these identities are supposed to become one thing.
It's so funny because I was in this writing class once with this woman and she made me laugh so fucking hard. She was a little bit older. She was probably closer to 50 and she wrote this story about her child. And she was like, you know, I feel very much so postpartum and, he's 11. And I laughed so hard because I was like, oh my God, yes. Like when, because it is such a, I do think like people talk about going through puberty, like that's the last big change.
And yes. Like,
that one, nothing.
Yeah.
Compared to nothing. I mean, my experience, Jesse, was that I will never forget when Gus was first born. I think maybe he was like 4 weeks old and Rob Hubel and his lovely wife, Holly, came over and watching them walk in the door like free as birds, you know, just I was staring at them like they were a different species.
It's like a different species.
Yeah, I was like, what is it like to be free? You know?
Yeah.
And then they came over to see Gus and then they left and Paul had purchased tickets. I love Billy Joel, grew up on Long Island.
Of course.
Love him.
You don't have to justify it.
I won't. I'm sorry. I won't.
No.
He's a great musician. I love
him. That's why you love him.
I love
him. Not because you're from Long Island.
Thank you.
Okay.
But he had purchased tickets to go see Billy Joel at the Hollywood Bowl before Gus was born. And I was like, oh yeah, we'll be more than ready to do that. And we left. And I remember sitting there and thinking, I'll never be with myself again. And I started weeping because I was like, I can never be in my own head. I'm here, but I'm also there. And I've been split.
Yes.
And it was such a profound grief that washed over me. And I do feel I have fully integrated now. You know, my youngest is 5, but it was the sort of putting those people together.
Yeah.
And I don't know that men go through. I think fathers do go through something like that. Absolutely.
Sure.
But it was a true, I don't know. It was one of the most profound like grieving processes I've ever been through.
That's such a specific moment. I know exactly what you're talking about. Because I remember when Asher was born, we were living in Brooklyn. And I really, again, like these pictures of moms, like anytime anyone posts a picture, like in the hospital bed, like their baby's just born and they kind of look like at all okay.
I did get hair and makeup done.
God bless.
I had a C-section with my second and I
got a Brazilian. A C-section.
I scheduled it. It was amazing. I scheduled that motherfucker. I consulted with Heidi Rose Robbins about when he was going to be born.
Oh, so glad Heidi was involved.
She was involved.
So glad Heidi was involved.
Full hair and makeup.
Great.
Was this your first or your second, though,
June? My second. But I.
Yeah, that feels like a second move.
And I got that special suite at Cedars, the Kardashian suite.
Great.
And I don't fucking.
Yeah, that's my experience. Look, tried to get the Beyonce suite at Lenox Hill. It wasn't tech a fail. But I was such a wreck.
Me too.
And I did not like leave the house for many days. Finally, tried to we had a pediatrician who was maybe like a 20-minute walk away. It was like, I don't know, you have to take them too far.
It was really hot. Yeah.
And I remember.
There's no way to get there.
I started to walk and like pushing this child in the stroller. And I made it about, I would say, 3 minutes into the walk. And I could feel like my organs jostling around. And I was like, I've got to turn back. Yes. And I was like, Mike, go on without me. I can't do. I was not doing well. But the first time I went to Manhattan, I was just like either at home or like stumbling to the pediatrician and trying to stumble back. But then like 3 weeks out, and the first time I like took the train into Manhattan to go do something that had to be done, that moment was like, June, what you're describing, where like the world was still
moving.
Like, people were still moving around. Mm-hmm. Like young people are doing their thing. And I was like, I'm on another full planet. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I've heard people describe grief, like when someone dies, that same feeling of like, you're not in the world. Like,
yeah, that's right.
Like everything is in a different rhythm. You're going in one direction. And
and
I was like, oh, it's so interesting that this feels not the same, but just similar.
Very similar.
In that way, where you're I'm not of the same planet as everyone around me right now.
I think New York, too, is very different because you live lifetimes in New York. And every street corner reminds me of a different age I was. And you grew up there, so it's even more intense.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a real time fuck.
For a long time, now it's different because if I go back, I mean, I'm going to New York next week, but there's so much that's different from when I was there. But for a little while after I moved to LA and then would come back, it was such a minefield for me I was like, anything below 14th Street, I was like, can never return to that restaurant, can never go back into that bar, see that person. Like,
that's right.
Left that place pretty fucking burnt to the ground in terms of relationship, employment. I can never return. It's sort of like auditioning. Some of you bomb an audition and you're like, I've had this experience so many times where I'm just like, I hope to never encounter one of those people again. Like, I am so fine with never crossing paths again in this lifetime.
100 I mean, stand-up shows I've done where I'm like, thanks very much, and then walk and like keep walking for about 2 hours out of there. And just like
walking out of your life.
Just
never be there again.
Clive Owen throwing a match.
And I do think that that's why Jesse's book is important. And because the only experience I've had where the outside world has been shocked by my behavior and really checked me was when I came back to LA. Jessica, I've told you this before, but I came back to LA after my mom died and I was like, I guess I'll start doing pilot season. You know, just couldn't have been less fit for public consumption. Okay. Yeah. Mom died suddenly. I was in a state of shock, grief, trauma, all of it. And was like, guess it's time to learn my sides. And I will never forget pulling into Universal, driving my Toyota Corolla. And I pulled in and this gentleman at the security little house jumped out. I feel like he jumped over a half door.
Why?
Okay, in front of my car.
Why?
Yeah. He goes, what are you doing?
My God. What?
And I go, it was a relief because it was like someone telling me you're not okay. Wow. And I go, what? And he goes, you're driving like a maniac.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
And I go, I was? And he goes, you just flew in here. Just watch it. What are you doing?
Oh, wow.
And I go, sir, I didn't know.
Oh, geez.
And he checked my God bless this little angel man. Oh. And I realized I can't be out here. And I think I emailed my manager that day and was like, I need a beat.
Take a beat. The thing though that especially I feel this very much now with the moment we're in with the pandy where this insane, and I know this is not an original hot take, but we're all in a trauma to various degrees. Some of us way worse than others. I have a very privileged version of having been in the trauma. I didn't lose anyone close to me. Haven't been sick. Nonetheless, we're on a global trauma.
Yes, we are.
And I think all the time about just the nature of the world we live in around where it's you're just supposed to keep marching, keep going. And it's around all of these moments in our lives where I'm going to call it the patriarchy. I think I can do that on a deep dive.
We're about to wrap up, but it was really important that we got that word in.
You
got to
get patriarchy in there. But birth.
Yes.
Dealing with a birth. I mean, truly to the point of just political policy, not to be, whatever. You can say this. We don't have maternity leave. We don't have death leave. We don't have, we're all just supposed to keep going kind of no matter what happens to us in a way that feels very much male energy to me. We're not allowed to you shouldn't have to keep going on the Today Show when you're getting possibly diagnosed with cancer. You shouldn't have to go do pilot season when your parent has died. We live in a world that very much makes it feel like there's no pause allowed.
And the scarcity model and just sort of the...
And not just feels like.
Yeah.
Economically. Yeah, yeah. Economically, yes. No pause allowed.
That's right. There's nobody taking care. You have to... And I think what we have to do to make up for that humongous deficit is to right now, because I've already come out of a trauma and I know exactly where this goes and it's pretty crazy. People are going to be start making some crazy moves.
Okay? No, I'm already, I think you know I've already been.
Well, you're going to be in the match. Debtor's prison, but yeah. And so and I'll be there with you. But like, people are going to start doing crazy things, blowing up relationships. Like, people thought, oh, okay, that was like that. No, we were out of
started
the
drinking vodka
trauma.
Red Bulls. Like, right. I'm not well.
Well, we're
no,
not.
None of us are well.
Yeah.
So we have to give each other the grace. And like, when people cancel on, I'm like, sweetie, you do you. Like, oh, we have it. To say to each it. Other, hey, are you okay with this? Like, do you need a minute? Like, do you need to not see me right now? Do you need, you know, because it's like, and giving even our spouses, like, hey, you might need an afternoon by yourself. We've been trapped with each other for so long. It's like, we need time alone to mourn and to grieve. And we need, as parents, I was saying, there was a parent who posted from BB school that her daughter was having a hard time. And I was like, wow, I think all of our kids are having a hard time and nobody wants to say it because we don't want to say there's something wrong with our kid. But these children are all in trauma and we're saying to them, you got your mask off, have fun. Go to camp. Yeah. And they're just like, guys, what the fuck?
Time for summer camp. Back-to-back summer camps.
I am actually in my own spiral right now that I haven't. Every year I seem to not quite get on the summer camp email.
I know, and now it's always closed.
The doors have closed. Emails out.
I will say as an admin, as a full raccoon person, I grew up, I never went to camp. I didn't go.
Did I?
I didn't go to camp a minute.
I didn't go to camp.
You know what I did in the summer? I grew up in Manhattan. I would stare out the window. I lived on the sixth floor of a building, top floor in the village, and me and my brother would count taxis going by.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. Yeah.
We would count yellow cabs, and we would get into the high hundreds, thousands.
Wow.
And that's what we would do. And then sometimes we'd go to a sprinkler across the street. Anyway,
This camp culture, I mean,
camp.
It's too much for me, honestly.
Too much. Like,
I feel so behind.
You got to put them somewhere.
I don't want to be around them.
Mommy's got to work. Mommy's got
I see those weeks to her. Staring
Wait,
ahead of
guys,
me.
This made me laugh so hard. BB's at gymnastics camp. Oh, God, I didn't tell Dan this. Now he's going to hear it. I hope he doesn't listen to this. But she goes, yeah, you know what they found in the... you know what they found in the ball pit? A rat.
She goes,
my biggest fear. A couple people saw whiskers and stuff and they were listening because it was peeking out. God, it must have been shocked.
She was alive?
Jumping. Yes, my friend.
Oh,
there's a live rat in the ball pit?
Wow, what lies beneath?
Oh my God, Jessica.
Do you think I sent her today?
Of course
I did.
Of course.
I go, here's your tuna sandwich. I sent it.
Did
they clean it out? She goes, they did. Because people were warning them. I saw whiskers. I saw its nose peeking. And I
pack one for her and one for the rat. Two tuna sandwiches to go. Your book about motherhood must be called A Rat in the Ball Pit.
A rat in the ball pit.
Imagine the fear of the rat. And that's what's crazy is my mom did not go to BB safety. Because that's not the kind of mom. When you were saying, Jesse, in your book, and before we go, you are going to read a passage from it. I must have you do this.
God,
but when you were saying, like, I didn't leave because I'm worried. I'm like, oh, no, I'm not worried enough. That's the point. Is I thought about that poor rat must have been terrified. Imagine.
Bunch of kids.
Okay, Jesse, before we leave, I want you to read the passage that made me sob while I was supposed to be taking care of Bibi and her best friend Clyde, and instead I was just sobbing behind my my sunglasses.
They've got that rat to talk about. They're fine.
Damn it, the rat.
Goddamn. I mean, I'm shook.
So will Dan be. I didn't even tell him. I just sent her.
It's amazing.
They got rid of it. That's the point. At least they cleaned
it. It's fine.
They found it. That's the point. Is they found
it. Oh my God.
It.
That rat mom is like You were in a ball. I feel like the rat mom will find out that the rat baby was in a ball pit and be like, "That's dirty. Get out of there." Like, even the rat mother knows no one should.
Told you never to go into that ball pit.
Told you never to go into that ball pit. Yeah.
No children should ever be in a ball pit.
You were near those. The rat mom is like, "You were near those dirty kids."
And then the rat mom is like, "God damn it, I want a nap so bad."
Oh my God. Rat mom. All right, I'm going to read this thing, but I don't know exactly how much you wanted me to read, and I can just read until you tell me to stop.
Just read,
because I got sent a thing.
Weep,
and you can also read.
I'm just going to just read, and I'm going
to
weep.
All right, okay? I'll read. I think what was sent to me to read.
Okay,
I think this is what was there. I have my anyway. Here it goes. Okay. The truth is that motherhood is a hero's journey. For most of us, it's not a journey outward to the most fantastic and farthest flung places, but inward, downward to the deepest parts of your strength, to the innermost buried core of everything you were made of but didn't know was there. And what I've learned now that I'm finally saying fuck it and taking a Xanax to just calm down and suck it up and write this book, there's a reason motherhood as a story is so infrequently told. It's because for so many people, our safest, sweetest, earliest memories are of nestling in our mother's lap, in her rocking warmth, hearing her sing as we get milk drunk and sleepy and burrow heavy-eyed into the crook of her soft arm. And if you knew that your mother's journey was intrinsically a hero's journey, if that was in any way an established narrative in our culture, you'd have to accept that this memory of womb-like safety, this foundation upon which so much of our identity is built, was often just an illusion. You'd have to realize that while you were blissed out on your mother's lap, one of those epic battles, the kind that envelops heroes as they fight their way out of a ring of fire, was raging just above your head. No one wants to believe that the moments you felt the most peaceful, the woman cradling you so softly, was shielding you from a sword that she herself was holding. Every mother you know is in this fight with herself. The sword that hangs over you is a sword of exhaustion, of frustration, of patience run dry, of her bladder practically exploding like a water balloon as she enters her third hour of sitting in a chair trying to get you to sleep. It's the sort of missing a meal because there wasn't time to eat while she was packing a diaper bag with the endless amount of stuff you needed to go to the park. The sort of sneaking one bite of string cheese while sitting on the edge of a damp sandbox. The sort of indignation at how little she feels like a human when she so often has to look and behave like an animal. And mostly, and this is the spikiest truth, it is the sort of rage, the rage and shock of how completely she must annihilate herself to keep her child alive. Ultimately, the hope of impossible delight almost always wins out over the impossible torment. I know this because here I am alive writing this, and here you are alive reading it, which means our mothers did what heroes do. They kept us all alive to tell our own tales one day. And what I can tell you is that so much of the heroism of motherhood is the ability to swallow the sword, to swallow the pain and frustration and keep everything inside. No one wants to think that their mother, that all-forgiving source of limitless, unconditional love, occasionally in a fit of rage or boredom, met her limits. And yet, of course she did. No one wants to know that after your mother finally placed you in your crib, she walked out of the room and screamed into a blanket, or cried in the bathroom, or drank a bottle of wine, or all of the above. No one wants to know that as she rocked you and sang you the 10th lullaby of the night, she was fantasizing about putting you down, walking out the door, and never coming back. A mother's heroic journey is not about how she leaves, but about how she stays.
Let's go up a deep dive. Let's go dive in deep. Let's go on a deep dive. No secrets will we keep. It's June and Jessica going deep. How deep can you go? Oh, really deep. Let's go on a deep dive. Let's go dive in deep.
The Deep Dive is produced by Jessica St. Clair, June Diane Raphael, and Earwolf. Our producer is Cody Fisher and sound engineer Jordan Duffy. You can listen to our ad-free and bonus episodes on Stitcher Premium. And for a free one-month trial of Stitcher, use code DEEPDIVE. And remember, the best way to support this show is to rate and review. And a huge thank you to Ann Geddes for her beautiful photo that she allowed us to use for our cover art. Please head over to AnnGeddesBaby.com and download her new app, which is a safe place you can upload and store all of your precious images of your children and share them with friends and family, plus much more. We'll see you next time.